listening to the Nerds Assemble podcast.
Welcome to episode 269 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
And this episode, we are joined by Dave Cook, who has, you know, volunteered slash been dragged on by me because I've wanted him on the show for a while. Say hi, Dave.
Hi, everyone. It's a pleasure to be dragged onto the show.
You've managed to catch him. Finally.
Well, I mean, to be fair, we've been kind of beset on our end by surviving Gish and then dealing with three weeks worth of interesting internet connectivity.
Yes, which has thankfully resolved.
But there was this terrifying moment when there was this BT Openreach guy outside the house earlier looking under the manhole cover where the connections were. And I was like, don't you fucking dare. Just leave it alone. Don't cripple our connection again, please.
And that's when he takes out a wire and sees you in the window and just cuts it.
Thankfully no such thing happened, and our connection stayed fine, unlike what it had previously been. Dave is
this just seems like, you know, front loading, you know, at the start of a disaster film where they say, you know, we're on this plane and nothing's ever gone wrong.
There just happens to be snakes in the hold. So Dave is, well, I know Dave from originally from, I think, some bit of video games journalism. You were writing back in the days of Now Gamer, weren't you, Dave?
Yeah, it was around about 2010, I started a career as a games journalist, a paid one. I kind of paid my dues for a while as an unpaid games journalist, as many people do before then. It was around about that time I was living down south, but back here in sunny Scotland now. It's definitely not sunny.
and these days you're sort of you're writing a whole bunch of things, including comics and games and books on side scrollers.
It's a coffee table book about side scrolling beat 'em ups, you know, like Golden Axe, Final Fight, Streets of Rage, all those kind of good games. And it's kind of like a complete history of the genre, every single game sequentially that's ever come out in the genre from 1984 up to 2020. And I've recently finished it, but developers keep on bringing out games. So if any of them are listening, please stop it.
So that you can get the book published and then leave the new ones for the next edition. Right, okay,
yes.
Cool. Okay, understood. Yes.
This doesn't sound at all related to my interests at all.
Right.
I mean, part of my evening today was removing the monitor from my JAMA cabinet. And I'm going to be testing the tube in it is very, very tired because it from an arcade. So I'm going to see if I can swap it out for a TV tube.
Dude, we could have a conversation about this for the whole podcast, but I think that would be
we need to get through the main sort of stuff that we kind of brought you on board for, because I hear a rumor that a Kickstarter for the third issue of your amazing Killtopia comic is on its way. So Dave, I mean, obviously, what are you working on right now, aside from your side-scroller book, trying to stop people from publishing games whilst you complete it? have you finished the script for Killtopia 3?
Yeah, believe it or not, I've actually almost finished the script for the fourth one now as well.
Oh my gosh.
I'm kind of doing Lord of the Rings kind of thing, just writing each one after the other one's finished and just cranking them out. It's a five-part series. The whole thing's art now. And I wish you guys could see my room right now that I'm in, because it's just got post-it notes all over the wall for the arc of the last two books. And it looks like the room of a madman. All that's missing is like the string connecting them all.
To be fair, I work for a business that survives half the time on post-it notes, because we're one of those fangled, lean, agile businesses, and post-it notes are like... I mean, I've had to ask for a box to be sent to me whilst I work from home.
A box of post-it notes?
Yeah, a box of post-it notes, like a massive, super extra sticky post-it notes.
Extra sticky?
Yeah, extra sticky. You have to have strong stick post-it notes to like really use them. You look aghast.
Like industrial level post-it notes?
Yeah.
First of all, I didn't know there were grades.
Yes, there are.
it's just, in. Is this in case you're, you know, you... taking notes in a wind tunnel?
Just
get close to a wall, put a note there saying a bit windy.
Despite the name, like regular post-it notes, like they just don't stick for long enough.
Presumably on like walls or boards and whatnot.
They're not so great, yeah.
I know you sometimes use them for like bookmarks.
Or for making notes. Yeah. Fine, like you're sticking them to paper, like regular ones, but as soon as there's walls involved, it gets interesting. And glass.
I can second that. Yeah, definitely.
But so you've got up to how many issues do you think Kiltopia could run to, or are you trying to conclude?
Yeah, the fifth one's actually the last one. So I'm just about wrapping up the script for four, and then it's straight into five, and then that'll be it done. Of course, like I already have, being one of these creative types whose brain never stops. I've already got ideas for a sequel that I'm pretty set on. So, but I think that would depend on just kind of my mood. I mean, I'm pretty much intending, like, once my current slate of comic scripts are written, taking a long time off, maybe even a year, because I've been kind of burning the candle at both ends since, like, I don't know, 2015 or something like that. But you know, never say never. it's always the way when you try and stop for a while that you get the ideas, your brain clears up and you start getting new ideas for things. So like a video game book about side-scrolling or what have you. So never say never, but it'll be Kiltopia will stop after book five.
Okay.
And we may or may not do that as like a double like bumper issue, maybe a nice hardback or like a perfect bound or something cool like that.
Nice.
But yeah, the arc was always kind of intended as a five-parter, and it's all kind of it's all fitting together quite nicely. I just need to make sure the scripts are like super tight.
So, like that, you know, there isn't a, no spoilers, obviously, but there isn't like a definitive end where everything explodes.
The thing is, like, a lot of stuff does explode.
Yeah, but, I think you need to explain what Kiltopia is, or else we're gonna loop. Everyone's gonna get a bit lost at this point.
Oh, yeah, sure. So Kiltopia is a cyberpunk comic book series. It's set in Neo-Tokyo quite a few years from now. But rather than, go for the dark and broody kind of cyberpunk kind of style, it's really the opposite. It's all colorful and vibrant, and life is actually not that bad. But in our setting, 10 years ago, there was a giant explosion in part of Neo-Tokyo. And all of a sudden, all these... sentient mechas, these robots, started like infesting that part of the city for some reason, which is obviously a spoiler, but rather than fix the problem, the government were like, hey, we can get rich off of this. So they turned that specific zone, which was called Sector K, into a blood sport called Kiltopia. And you know, all these high-tech bounty hunters from all around the world come to the Japan and to Neo-Tokyo to enter Sector K and hunt the mechs for sport, basically. But if you're really good at it, you can get sponsors and Netflix deals and merchandise and like legions of fans and just infinite money and fame. So it sort of drives this like a sort of capitalistic need. Meanwhile, the mechs give off these nanomachines, and that's created a disease called the rot, which basically, imagine inhaling trillions of nanomachines, and then they start to terraform your body from the inside, breaking down your tissue as fast as it can heal. Every nice. Second of every day. So everyone's sick, but they're so distracted and like besetted with these high-tech bounty hunters and this blood sport that they don't care. They're just so caught up in the hype and the commercialism of it and the fandom. So it's kind of a comment on kind of, I guess, how we are kind of as people, you know, rallying behind little pockets of fandom and stuff. And that's a wonderful thing. You know, I do it, but sometimes you can get kind of nasty, you know, like kind of hate campaigns and cancel culture and stuff like that. But in the middle of it all, the world's first sentient robot appears, and his name's Crash. And he meets Shinji, who's like a rookie wrecker, who, you know, wrecks mechs in Kiltopia without a license, so he does it illegally. But he does it to basically buy his sister's medical care, because she has this disease. But Crash has a secret that could cure the rot for everyone. So they have to go off and find out how to develop the cure while being chased by every bounty hunter in Japan. So it's like Yakuza's, you know, killer sex dolls with a god complex, giant corporate branded mechs and stuff like that.
Mm.
So all that fun stuff. So yeah, really, it's a mix of all that kind of stuff, you know, like Japanese video games, manga, anime, action movies. There's tons of references in there, but that's the sort of short version.
And
yeah, it just sounds very Japanese.
It sounds like a lot of awesome things. So we've got issues 1 and 2 have been published already, and it's looking like you've got a Kickstarter for 3 heading our way soon. When are you guys hoping to drop that?
So we're going to do a reveal soon, but the campaign will come early October. So yeah, we'll release the date, and we're on Twitter and Facebook and everything. So we'll make sure everyone kind of knows about it. And there'll be like a Kickstarter pre-launch sort of sign up as well. So yeah, there's lots of ways you can find out about it. But we always go kind of big on our rewards and the cool like swag you can get. So we've got some really nice guest artists lined up, like Derek Robertson from The Boys and Transmetropolitan. He's done our variant cover, which is kind of cool. We've got a few other people as well lined up, which is neat, like Shaky Kane, Sebastian Perez, who does amazing like Marvel and DC fan art, and just sort of artists that really fit the cyberpunk aesthetic really well. So there's a mixture of like really big names and sort of like newcomers, but like they all fit that vibe really well. So yeah. And I think we've also got some other things as well, like branded merchandise, t-shirts, even like 3D printed heads of the robot character Crash, which have been hand painted, and so they look all kind of battle worn and stuff. So yeah, lots of swag, lots of cool stuff on the way.
Neat. So now we've talked about your main project there, I mean, how did you end up writing indie comics? I like vaguely remember when this transition happened, but I still don't quite understand how it happened.
Yeah, so this would have been like back in the games journalism days.
Yeah.
So, you know, I used to write for a few video game news websites, Now Gamer being one of them, and VG247. I was the UK editor there. And it was great fun, you know, like that was my dream job out of like high school, was like to play games and write about them. I mean, that's like obviously like an amazing thing for a kid, but to think about, but the reality is kind of like it's quite low paid, it's quite hard work. You know, getting free games and consoles is cool, but like you kind of, it gets to a point where you're like, I just want more money because I need to live.
Yeah.
So I thought, you know, I'm going to just start moving on to other things and to keep myself a bit happier, because I was getting quite unhappy with writing the same old stuff. And you know how fast like video game news travels, like it kind of lives and dies really quick. And I thought I want to write something that will last longer, like a book or like, you know, whatever. So I wrote a novel, and then that didn't go too well. I really wasn't that good. I'm probably never going to share it ever.
Don't worry.
Oh, totally. And I thought, I'm going to scale it back a bit and learn the craft a bit more by doing a short story first, you know. And that again, I sort of realized that I wasn't good at writing the sort of descriptive text, you know. You know, the guy walks into a room and this is what he looks like. And I couldn't really get what I was seeing in my head down in that kind of form of writing. So I thought, you know what, I'm going to get someone to draw it and I'm going to make it a comic. And then I just went on our forums, our reader forums, and said, hey, thinking about doing a comic. Is anyone here an artist? And then that's how I met my friend Chris O'Toole. And he and I worked on my first comic called Bust together, which is like I guess it's like a mashup of like Fallout, Mad Max, and Fight Club.
Would this be Evil Ash, Chris?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, I know him well from Eurogamer.
Yeah, so yeah, he was sort of a quite
yeah.
What's the word? Quite a quite a regular on those kind of forums.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, he sort of put his hand up and said, "Oh yeah, he's great, honestly." And I mean that series is still going. Like, we're actually really slow producing it, but we've sort of relegated that one to more just like in our own time kind of thing. So we started doing that, and then we did the, basically I went to my first Comic Con as a punter, which was Edinburgh Comic Con, just to get a feel for the vibe and speak to other creators who had done this, because I didn't have a clue, right? This was like, I didn't really do any research. As always, I just jump into everything with 2 feet and then worry about it later. Like a coffee table book about beat-em-ups. So I went around and just showed people like the artwork and some of the script and stuff, and just got really friendly with a few people who I still work with now. And they were like, "Hey man, you should do like a Comic Con. You should like finish the book, get it printed, just a small run." So I did Glasgow Comic Con, which is my first show. I just kind of buddied up with a friend on a table, like, we shared a table. Mm. And it was cool. All my social details were inside the book, and I started getting these messages from people that read it, like, "Hey man, that was really cool. When's the second one going to be done?" And I'm like, "Oh yeah." Because the first story was a complete thing, and I thought I could totally like pick it up and do a second issue and a third. And I thought, yeah, I'm gonna do it. So I started my own like indie imprint, which I don't use too much these days, to be honest. And started just coming up with other ideas and doing more shows, and it just snowballed from there, really. And it's kind of, I don't know, that was about 5 years ago now, maybe just over 5 years, which it's crazy how much the time has flown. But yeah, I'll start from that one failed novel.
Wow.
Well, part of the secret is knowing what you're good at.
Yeah.
And what you're not good at.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
And if you can say, well, this part is not, it's not for me. And one of the worst things you can do is just kind of, try and push yourself, because then I've seen people do that and it just ends up, you resent doing it, and it kind of also leads to the people reading it resenting reading it, because they can kind of tell that tone comes through. Whereas if something is flowing, if something is just working, then, it's a completely different experience.
Yeah, I would say I'm definitely a bit of a perfectionist in that sort of regard, sometimes I'll sit down to write. Like, I have like a regular night of the week that I write my comics, like I dedicate that time to it.
Good idea.
But sometimes it's like I sit down, open the laptop, and I'm working from home as well, right? At the same laptop, so it kind of feels psychologically, it's kind of like, back to work, And if it ever feels like that, and I actively don't want to do it, then I just don't. Because you're right. I mean, I think if you do force it, it definitely comes mm-hmm. across as mm-hmm. not your best work. It kind of misses something. Maybe it's like passion or something, but there's definitely a spark kind of missing from it. I agree 100%. I only ever write now if I actively want to do it.
It just works so much better, because if you're enjoying it, that does come through.
Yeah, and it even gets to the point where if I'm not feeling it, I'll piss it off maybe like a week or two. Then the guilt starts to creep in. Then I always start to feel like, yeah, maybe we should just write. let's just try it, and then I'm back in the zone again. But it's funny how the brain works when it comes to these things.
It is.
Yeah. So with Kiltopia, like, because I've read the first two issues, like there is a lot of like intertextuality and like references going on. What are clearly some of the inspirations that you've got behind your world and characters and story? Because there's definitely, I can see influence, but I want you to call it out if you don't mind.
Is it no pressure, but please list your influences.
Please.
Oh, man.
So academic.
So, it's weird, right? So the main influence, right, for Kiltopia, the main one, the one spark that made me want to write it, before it was even like it was even a cyberpunk thing, right? No joke, it was the NHS. This is like when, I'm not going to get political on the podcast, but when the Tories kind of came into power and started saying, "Oh, maybe we could sell the NHS or parts of it," and I just saw like how upset that was making people, and like mm-hmm. I just thought, right, this is like such a big thing and it's never going to go away. And I thought, I want to write something that's kind of about healthcare, but with a sort of like, it's grounded in realism, but also it's like it takes place somewhere else, because I'm not too big on like realistic stories, you know, everyday kind of stuff. I like to be a bit more out there so I can have some fun with it. But then that's how the idea of, you know, a world that's kind of sick, you know, hence the disease that's in Kiltopia. But, you know, people are blinded and misdirected by things, and there's always a danger that people can't get the healthcare they need. That's really where the initial spark came from. And I thought, right, a world with a disease, people are fighting robots for the cure. They're risking their life to do so. It's just like these mad, mad lengths that people go through to get this cure that they need. But the more interesting answer is like, obviously Japanese action video games, right? So the big one for Kiltopia was No More Heroes by Grasshopper, which of course is about assassins, you know, in the sort of gamified ranking battle, trying to kill each other, which is totally Kiltopia. You know, it's all these like bounty hunters with like mad tech and cool personas and just over the top brash kind of ways about them. And there, so it was that. One of the other ones was Transmetropolitan, which I'm loath to bring up because of recent controversies. But, you know, I can't deny that that was, you know, that was, you know, years ago when I was a journalist. You know, it is a comic about journalism. So obviously that struck a big chord with me. So, and they both take place in a kind of world that's like ruled by pop culture and hype and things like that. So I have to mention it, but, you know, obviously, yeah, it's a bit of a controversial one now, but unfortunately, but which is disappointing, but, you know, it's such is life. And yeah, I'd say video games really are the main influence, apart from the NHS thing. It's like, especially Japanese action games, you know, the works of like Platinum Games, Bayonetta, Vanquish, just these like overblown, over the top, really brash kind of action games. So yeah, I think those are all the main ones. I think Battle Royale is obviously, there's a little bit of that in there. Akira, Ghost in the Shell, all the kind of usual suspects, yeah. Really.
I'm liking these.
Yeah. See, I could
definitely. Yeah, I mean, that's why on our Kickstarters, we're always like quite eager to say, we always have a bit at the top that says, do you like these things? And we list all the pop culture kind of references and inspirations. Then you'll like this comic, and that seems to work.
Now, you see, I like that approach better than some of the people who are, oh no, my work of art is absolutely unique. Nothing has ever been done like it in the world. And you go, it looks a fuck ton like Star Wars to me.
Yeah, man, but that's the thing, right? So our Facebook page exponentially exploded once we started like sharing stuff that was nothing to do with our comic. I remember it was like, I think Blade Runner 2049 came out after we announced the first book. So we started tweeting about that, right? Because we were fans of it as well.
Mm.
And weirdly, the posts where we share things that we're just into do really well and seem to get us a lot of fans from those pages that we share them from.
Yeah.
It just goes to show though, right? Be genuine about your influences and embrace them, and don't be afraid to show that you're really a nerd about these things. Cause like, you know, we are, you know, that, you know, and the fans of those things like our things. So it kind of makes sense for us all to kind of come together under that banner, you know, but
I think people appreciate it.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And I think a lot of people, it's amazing how many people come up to our Comic Con table and just say like, you know, how this goes, you sort of give a bit of a pitch, right? And you sort of say, hey, buy my comic kind of thing. The amount of people that have come up and went, hey, that cover looks a lot like Akira. And I'm like, yes. And then I know that they're going to be totally the right kind of person for it.
Yeah.
And I haven't even said a word at this point. And I'm like, tell me more. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
So hopefully it comes across, you know, that we're into that kind of stuff, mm-hmm. just from looking and reading the book, you know.
I have to admit that part of the storyline for it, I don't know if you've ever read it, but part of the storyline reminds me a little bit of this cyberpunk novel called Sinners by Pat, how do I pronounce his name? Is it Cadigan? Cadigan? I can see the book across the room. It's like one of the few books from like I read in my like near my degree that I actually like kept. So but yeah, it's called Sinners, and sort of the storyline reminds me a little bit of that. But more people have read Neuromancer versus that, so by Gibson.
Yeah. That's the weird thing, because a lot of people say like, hey man, like you must be a big fan of like, you know, Philip K. Dick and all this kind of stuff, and I'm like, nope.
No.
Which is probably blasphemy, but again, it's like when people come up to me and say like, what comics inspired Kiltopia, and I'm like, none, apart from Transmet. But or like what comics like are you reading right now? And usually my answer is none. It's a weird thing for me, right? Because video games are my prime influence, not comics, and it really takes people aback when I say I'm not really a big comic guy, but I do read comics. You know, I do have like a to read pile, and I get through it. But you know, when people say, "Hey, man, have you seen this new comic by this person?" and they're just chucking names at me, and I'm like, "I have no idea who you're talking about." But that's, you know, but I think that's fine. I mean, for me, it's like, you know, if we all kind of read the same stuff, you know, and digested the same stuff, I think it's nice to have comics from people from different kind of backgrounds. Mm. But that does sound like I'm making excuses for myself. But, you know, hey, that's just my kind of philosophy on it, you know?
I mean, to be honest, I think geek culture is just so big now that it's kind of, you can never see, read, and play everything within that culture.
Yeah.
Definitely. It's just impossible.
I get a bit angsty now when people try to recommend stuff to me, because I'm like, I already have like a massive backlog of games, TV series, films, fanfic also, and some comics that I would read, and it's like, yeah, no.
And the thing is, though, is that, I mean, you naturally kind of get round to, you know, kind of exploring that stuff anyway, without people kind of pointing, going, hey, this is good.
There have also been a couple of instances where people have recommended stuff to me and I've gone and looked at it and been like, no. When I finally thought I could make some time for it, and I went and had a look, and I was like, yeah, no. Oh, wait. Stuff that tends to fall into the oh, no category is stuff made for sci-fi. Channel, sci-fi, like, but except the exception being Wayne Earp, that was okay, but also comic book adaptation, so yeah.
Did you ever watch on you go.
just, you know, things made for sci-fi, it's just a while ago when they said that they were going to make less stuff but higher quality.
That was a lie.
A long time, didn't it?
That was a huge feck-off lie. And Wayne Earp's only had better production values than a lot of the stuff they've made, because they made, is it Image Publishing, I think? Or is it Dark Horse? One or t'other. Made them deal with like most of the production cost. So it's like, yeah. Anyway.
So it's like, you know, here's the way we're going to do it. And you get, yeah, that's not how it's going to happen. Taking that away from you.
I think there's always kind of a battle with that when it comes to risk versus, you know, reward.
Mm.
So, you know, obviously, you know, they're eager to kind of get new series off the ground in order to kind of get people interested. And then they go, no, we want to play it safe, actually. It's like, but you started this thing, and there's this interesting stuff that's going to happen. Nah, play it safe.
So with the first two comics, you had Craig Peyton, is it?
Yeah.
Is that how you pronounce it? Right. Doing the art. What's happening with the art for the comic three?
So for the third book, we announced a while back that Craig was kind of moving on. So. Which is a shame. I mean, he's still involved kind of behind the scenes. He's helped us out with some, like, you know, Kickstarter graphics and stuff like that. So that's really cool. Like, he and I were friends before we did the comic, but I think he felt like, you know, he kind of wanted to do his own thing, and he's doing his solo project, which is called Hard Code. Really cool cyberpunk art book. And that goes on Kickstarter soon as well, October as well.
Okay.
So anyone that's into Killtopia, definitely check that out, because there's a lot of... new artwork from Craig, and there's some Killtopia stuff in there as well. And we'll be like cross promoting and stuff as well. So, well worth checking that out. We've got a new artist in called Clark Bin. So he's worked on quite a few things, and he's just like knocked it out of the park. And his style is very, very similar to Craig's as well. And it looks like not a million miles away at all from like the original style. In some cases, it's kind of indistinguishable, which is really scary. we've had some new artwork through as well, and some pages, and it's looking so nice. I really can't wait to show more of that.
I mean, I have to say, from reading the first two issues, what I have really liked about them is just the kind of color work that goes into them as well, just because, like you were saying earlier, like it's cyberpunk, but it isn't super gritty. It has got that kind of bright colorfulness, which actually for something set in Japan, you'd think that colorfulness would remain regardless of what level of dystopia is going on.
I suppose other than that, there's also the whole kind of different like assassins kind of having like their own looks and whatnot as well, which kind of you can't have like, you know, X amount of assassins that kind of all look very, very similar or use like a singular color scheme almost. Yeah.
Unless, of course, you're the Hand and you're Marvel, in which case everybody looks the same. And there's just too many ninjas. I'm sorry, I haven't managed to watch... We haven't managed to watch season 3 of Daredevil because we got...
Because ninjas.
Yeah. Pretty much. Pretty much.
Yeah. I think watching The Defenders was something that we did like almost like in the background. Because it was kind of, it's just kind of a bit dull.
Yeah.
I think that's the right way to watch it.
In the background.
Yeah. also there.
Moving this back to other comics, though, the other side of things, obviously in mainstream at the moment, while Marvel's sort of okay, DC's been going through some massive turmoil because of the purchase of Warner by AT&T. Being finalized. Do you have any thoughts on that, Dave, or just the mess that's been happening?
Yeah, there was that interesting thing about, like, I don't know, there was that comment that was about, you know, the comics are kind of like an IP pool.
Yeah.
That we will, you know, take ideas from and make them into movies and stuff. I mean, I'm in two minds about it, right? For one, I think it's kind of like a bad thing to say because it sort of diminishes the point of the comics, right?
Yeah.
The way it was worded, I think, was kind of crap. But in another way, it's like, yeah, obviously, you know what I mean? If a comic does really well, they're obviously going to consider it for an adaptation. That's just a given. But there are so many, a million other way, better ways they could have said that.
It's like, you know, we know, but it's a bit like, you know, sausages. Don't show us how they're made.
Yeah.
Don't show the process. We just want the delicious result.
Yes. And the thing is as well, I mean, comics have a hard enough time as it is right now, right? You know, brick and mortar shops, you know, while they're, you know, quite a lot of them are still open, they're going to take a hit right now, right? Like, this is the last thing you need is some big name, you know, sticking a knife in the ribs again like that. You know, I just think the industry is going to be in a very different place once, you know, whenever all this kind of gets back to normal. I mean, the thing is as well, like, we're in brick and mortar stores as well. You know, our shop has distribution, and I dread to think how low our numbers are right now. But we're nobody's by comparison, right, to these big DC titles. But I don't know, it just makes for kind of grim reading when you look at like how much comics are making at the moment. And I think the whole model kind of needs a shake up, I think. But I wouldn't be the guy to have any solutions for that. But I don't know. It's interesting. I'm interested to hear what you guys think, though, as well, because it's kind of, I don't know, there's a lot of different schools of thought going around about it.
I fell out of love of reading the big two about 5 years ago. It happened to coincide with me getting into Supernatural and just being like, I can't be bothered with trying to keep up with story arcs that are across a whole bunch of character series that I don't follow. Like, I think they went too big with the whole event model, and it hasn't helped them do what they actually wanted to do, which was make more money.
I remember actually distinctly feeling that when I don't read the big two either, but I actually took a punt on Spider-Gwen. So I thought, hey, cool, alternate universe. This is like a brand new start. Like, I won't need to know like all this extended canon. Then, of course, you know, at the end of the first run, it came to an end. Then I think Gwen Stacy joined the Spider, the Web Warriors, which is part of the Spider-Verse. Then it just was like, the comic literally had a checklist in the back of it. Want to follow the story? Get these books. And there was like 10 books. Yeah. I'm like, yeah. I'm out. I'm done. Sorry. The fact you put a literal checklist in the back of your book tells me everything I need to know. No thanks.
Yeah, me, it was Squirrel Girl was like the last straw. I was like really getting into it, and then I was like, wait, what? No.
The thing is, though, is that's not, it's not too bad if you don't need to know the backstories for, you know, these things. You know, it's a bit like, you know, intertextuality and references in your media, where you don't necessarily need to know where something comes from to be like, ah, and appreciate it.
Mm.
Versus, you know, stuff where you do actually need to know the background for, you know, why this character is this way or what's happened to this other character that appears to be completely different almost, you know, in kind of two issues earlier or whatever.
I may also be bitter over how Vertigo was treated.
Oh, Jesus.
I'm still not over that.
I was, let's see, I left college in, shut up everyone, 1991. Which was round about the perfect time for Vertigo. I was relatively early in stuff like Sandman. Hellblazer was going. You know, various other books like that. So I started off not, you know, I wasn't the one buying them. So I'd, you know, borrow them off a, you know, off a friend. And I was reading those. And I got into Vertigo and it was like, blimey, there's actually comics that I don't hate. Because I would, you know, I'd be bought superhero stuff, but I was never a fan. So, you know, local comic shop, you know, would go in and I'd buy, you know, the indie stuff, the, you know, the sci-fi, you know, some of the manga stuff that was coming in through Dark Horse. You know, all, you know, various little things like that, and you know, got, you know, really into those, but then kind of, you know, financially got knackered, so, you know, kind of fell off a load of, you know, comics, and then ended up just, you know, catching up with them with graphic novels collections. And then, yeah, then I find out all this stuff about DC knocking Vertigo on the head, and it's just, you morons!
I mean,
yeah, they could have easily just kept the name going, right? Even as an in-house thing, they could have done it.
Yeah,
because I always, you know, all this stuff with, well, it as in a prime example here when it comes to, you know, Vertigo, you know, properties, Lucifer.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Where it's a Lucifer character, you know, co-created by Neil Gaiman. So, you know, from Sandman, I am, you know, I know the character's arc from, you know, Sandman and Hellblazer. So, I know, you know, some of the stuff that they're coming up with, but that just gets squeezed into a, you know, cop procedural.
Yeah.
And it's only now that, you know, Neil Gaiman is working on a Sandman series. So, you know, there's all these things that I thought, you know, were perfect. But if you think about, you know, a TV series based on, you know, some of these things, you know, in the 90s, late 90s, or even early 2000s, they would have been hard. They wouldn't have been treated well. Whereas, you know, now it's perfect for, you know, picking up, you know, some of these things. But yeah, it just seems to be, when I was actively reading, you know, a lot of comics, Marvel were the sort of flailing big company, and DC were doing really well with their niche stuff, you know, mostly Vertigo, and you know that, of course, their, you know, superhero stuff was, you know, also doing well. But now it just seems to have flipped around, and it, yeah, there is a massive problem with this whole thing of, oh, comics are an IP, you know, breeding ground. So yeah, that's the wrong way of doing it. You need to get something working first. You know, give someone a playground to do what the hell they want. And if it works, then, you know, by all means, you know, think about making a series or a film or something, but, you know, don't treat it as a test ground incubation chamber for stuff that you're going to make proper money from.
I'm still...
Yeah, test grounds is the right way of putting it, though, because, like, it's almost like they were admitting that they're going to make new comic properties with the intention, yeah, of a movie, like, already in mind. And that's like such a backwards way of doing it.
Yeah, and it's just like, I really struggle to think of anything, whether it be you know, comic, game, in a TV movie, or you know, movie, where they've specifically set off to, you know, to do a franchise and it's worked. It's just, you don't do it like that. You make the thing, and then if it really catches on, you go, oh, hang on, we've got these other ideas. And yeah, it's a shame. So I've got boxes full of comics up in the, up in the loft, and it's mostly mangas from Viz. The Dark Horse collected stuff. I've got, Gunsmith Cats on the shelf right in front of me. Complete collected Akira. That was a ball ache waiting for that to come out.
Yeah.
The original coloured issues that they were doing. I don't know if anyone had to experience that other than me.
I seem to remember it though. Yeah, there was like certain pages that were in colour, or was it the whole thing?
They were doing them completely colour.
Oh wow.
So there were just certain pages in the original manga that were in colour. But they were doing the redoing the entire color scheme in these comics, and it just took so long for them to come out. And then they did collected stuff, and it was like, yay, thank God for that. I don't have to go rifling through like about 50 issues. So yeah, I completely fell off the comic bandwagon. Wasn't really a bandwagon, it was more like a trolley at that point. But it's kind of nice to be starting to jump back on with certain series. But yeah, it's kind of like you say, I really don't know how, when I was forced, basically, money wise, it was a choice between building a new computer or buying comics, and I needed a new computer at the time, and moving house, everything like that. All these real life things that just, crap on your plans. So it's just, I had to drop stuff, and then I realized that most of the things that I was buying was out of habit. So it's kind of nice to, go to, I've got a few mates who are, big into, collecting, comics. Not really the superhero stuff, but, they read some. And it's kind of nice because you get a good set of recommendations. If you walk into a shop, it's please buy our thing, we bought 50 copies.
Yeah.
And we had to buy 50 because there was a variant cover that someone really wanted.
So, I guess it's like what I do now is like I just buy collected editions like trades and stuff.
Yeah.
In that sense, it's quite easy to sort of walk around and just browse. You don't feel obligated to pick up the same, the continuation of the story. I mean, I suppose the singles are already done. So for me, it's like, hey, what new trade, what new series can I start? I'll maybe pick up the first trade, or maybe like the next one. There's a lot more sort of browsing involved, and you never know what ones will stick. I mean, I bought a few that maybe I didn't continue with, but overall, it's kind of worked out, that sort of approach,
Yeah, that does work. That, that's a great way. Or you can walk in, oh, there's a collected thing. That's got an interesting title. Have a flick through, read, a few pages and think, yeah, this is the kind of thing for me.
Yeah.
And it's a completely different thing to if you would walk into a comic shop and there'd be an issue 7. And you think, well, bollocks.
I've only read 2 comic series. No, sorry, tell a lie, 3 comic series in the last year. I've been reading Check Please, which is an online comic that also has physical editions now. It finished in the past year. So I've been reading that. Kiltopia has been one of the only comics I've read now in the past year. And I discovered that I had some Lock and Key, like the first 2 trades of that hidden away, which I must have got on a Humble Bundle like a million years ago. And I got hold of a tablet recently, so I kind of downloaded Comixology and read the sort of 2 collective volumes of Lock and Key. It's only like the first 2. But I just haven't been reading them at all. I think Check Please, no offense, Dave, Check Please was like the biggest thing that I've read in the past.
No offense.
Year.
But,
no offense.
But to be fair, I mean, because you were into hockey before that, weren't
yeah,
you?
I was into hockey before. Yeah. It's Check Please features a lot of ice hockey and baking and love. So it's got quite a fandom gathering around it. So
that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I have to admit, I think the most of the comics I've got recently are from things like Humble Bundle.
The, you know what?
One of those was a Star Wars one, so it, you know, or Star Wars and Star Trek. So it was, you know, two of my you know, my favorite. I was going to say fandoms. Just the fandoms are not my favorite part.
Mm.
The things, yes. The fandoms, maybe not so much.
I think what's interesting with Humble Bundle, because like, or certain things where stuff's brought out, like all sales and things like Comixology. And I think some people do forget that they're owned by Amazon these days. I certainly didn't when it tried to get me to merge my accounts, because I'd been using Comixology before it had been owned by Amazon. And then when I went in to like actually use it for the first time to read that lock and key trades, it was like, oh, you should really merge those accounts. I was like, fine.
It could be worse. You could have an Oculus Rift.
Well, that's true. Yeah, I could have an Oculus Rift.
We're never going to be part of Facebook. Please merge into the Facebook.
Please merge. I've heard, I think I've seen headlines suggesting that that is not going to sway very well under German privacy and consumer laws. So that's fun. Okay, so more questions for Dave. So what's it been like this year, obviously, with like no physical conventions taking place? Has this impacted like what plans, you know, you've had for stuff like Killtopia?
Well, in a weird way, I was getting pretty burnt out on shows, so actually it was a blessing in disguise.
You're not the first person I've heard say that.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's because like the bulk of our cash comes from our Kickstarters, right? Mm. They kind of fund us year to year. So I guess we're in that lucky position where we're not as reliant on con takings. Obviously, like it's really cool when we have a good show and we kind of do well. It helps us like pay for more artwork and stuff. But I think it also helps that Killtopia was pushed back by our publisher a bit, just so there wasn't that urgent need to scrape money together and you know get stuff done. We're at that point now, though, of course, with the Kickstarter launching soon. But, you know, I do kind of miss shows in that, like, there's a lot of regular fans that I come across at shows. You know, they come up to the table and they seek us out every year. And that's, like, one of the most heartwarming things ever, though. Like, hey, I came back to see, and you actually start to remember them. And you're like, hey, man, you know, it's like, I haven't seen you since this time last year. but the fact that they still make the effort to come and see you and stuff is, like, it's mind-blowing to me. And also, of course, you know, a lot of the, you know, all of us comic creators on the circuit, we all know each other, right? So we all do the same shows and we all go for after drinks and stuff and we're all friends. And I definitely miss like all those guys. And yeah, it's a shame. I mean, we talk online and stuff, but there's just something definitely missing, you know, without, you know, actually hanging out and catching up in person and stuff. The one I'm most upset about is Thought Bubble, because that one... Despite, I mean, it's not even that it's a good show. I mean, it is amazing, but it's almost like, for a lot of people, it's the last show of the year. So it has this kind of like finality to it. Like, hey, let's have a big blowout at the party and let's all like hang out. You know, we've all survived another year. Sort of brings everyone together in a really nice way, you know. And we're not going to have that, you know, which is kind of a, I don't know, the year won't end on the usual bang it usually does, which is a shame. But yeah, I mean, I guess in terms of, you know, had we had our normal production schedule this year, we probably would have felt the lack of cons a lot more than we are now. But I guess everything just kind of worked out. I mean, it gave me more time to work on my other projects and everything else. But I would like cons to go back to normal next year, but I guess we'll just see what happens.
Yeah, I think everyone's going to be playing it by ear, really.
Yeah.
It's like with... I used to be a regular at EGX, but
cool.
I miss it, but especially this year, I've seen a few people say, I'm missing it, but I'm also kind of just going,
a year off.
yeah. It's like, you know, ready for next year. Shame that it's not happening this year, but it's kind of, you know, relaxing rather than having to gear up for, you know, this, and then recover from that and then gear up for that. And then, you know.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, like I remember, I think it was like year before last was probably my busiest year for shows. Cause that's just cause like the comic was blown up in a big way. So we thought, hey, let's book into more shows and stuff. And I think at one point, I think it was like 4 or 5 weekends in a row, I was out of town at a con. And that was just like, that broke it for me a little bit. I was just like, I can't do this. and it was cool. You know, we smashed those shows. We did really well. But man, like, I miss being home, you know, with my wife and our cats and stuff. As cheesy as it sounds, but you know, when you're just not at home every weekend, it's just a bit,
yeah,
you know, it can wear down on you a little bit. But like, you're having fun, but it's also, yeah, quite, I mean, working shows is really tiring as well. Rewarding as all hell, but yeah, every weekend it just gets a bit much, you know. But definitely not doing that anymore.
it's kind of, if you're there for the full, you know, duration, you're enjoying it for the first 2 days at least, and then, you know, third day, you know, fourth day, you're ready.
Yeah, and it's also like, it's also it's quite, a lot of people get sick at shows as well. Like us creators always joke about it, just because like you're in this like enclosed space and there's a lot of people and
expo lurgy.
Oh, totally, yeah, and but then there's also that. There's also like you've probably been on the lash every night. You probably haven't had much exercise, many vitamins. You just feel, sometimes on the Sunday, you just feel like, you feel like a zombie.
I'm so proud of myself for not getting con lurgy at MCM Comic Con London the one time I went, and not getting con lurgy when I went to the Supernatural convention that I went to in 2016, which was in America, and I had plenty of opportunity between air flight and being in a hotel filled with several thousand people, to like get all the lurgy, because I was the weird Brit in the middle of a bunch of Americans, and everyone wanted to talk to me, which was hilarious when they heard my accent. So my secret was hand gel and having a flu jab.
Nice.
That was my secret.
Yeah, first expo I went to, bumped into, you know, a friend. And it was, you've got hand gel. Okay, that seems a bit much. And then it was like, oh, no, I see why. Because I never got ill from it. But I knew plenty of other people who were, you know, they'd get back and, you know, after a day or so, it would be, I don't feel too good.
Yeah.
There's definitely like, a sort of survival kit that I think like myself and a lot of creators are kind of agree on. It's like, always have loads of fruit underneath your table, like oranges or like a godsend.
Yeah.
The hand gel is a must. Just coffee, but also take tons of water. Just all these little things that can make a big difference. But the most annoying thing is when you take all those precautions and you still get ill.
Yeah, yeah.
You're just like, come on.
Another question. So if you told people to read one thing that wasn't one of your comics, what would it be? And it doesn't have to be a comic. But one thing.
Right. Oh no, I need a minute to think about that. That is crazy. So it doesn't have to be a comic.
It doesn't have to be a comic.
Okay.
If that makes it any easier or not.
I just pick something completely random? Like, I don't even think it's the best thing ever, but it's the first thing that came to my head.
Go for it.
So there's a book, if you're into video games, there's a book called Masters of Doom. I don't know if you guys have heard of it. It's the story of id Software.
Okay.
So like John Carmack and John Romero, you know, making id Software and then coming up with Doom and Wolfenstein and stuff like that. It's a phenomenal story. Because like these guys were like 19, right? And they had Ferraris and supermodel girlfriends and just like infinite money, infinite drugs. And man, it's just a wild story. Like, I'll be surprised if we don't make a movie about it at one point. And just how their perfect little bubble of like fame and excess and success and wealth just collapsed so spectacularly. And they all start falling out and like leaving the company. And it's just a wild story. Like, if you're into like games and like to see, like, as we mentioned earlier, right, how the sausage is made,
yeah,
how the games are made in back then. It was a different world from how it is now. Like, no corporate structure, just a bunch of like kids running amok, acting like rock stars, making games, and it's like, it's incredible.
Now you now I'm just wondering what kind of sausage, what brand of sausage would Daikatana be?
Oh god, it would be like, it's got to be like a rat or something, right?
Yeah.
Something very not palatable at all.
Yeah.
It's like no brand name value, basic range. And it just says meat. just name an animal. Meat.
But it's meat in like quote marks.
Yeah.
It sounds like the meat pies.
Meat, like Matty.
It sounds like the meat pies that are on sale by the what's his name in the Terry Pratchett's Discworld? The thingies meat pies of dubious repute. I've got more than one of those somewhere, actually, now that I think about it. In the house. Got like a little clay model of one. Random. Sorry. It's just about random meat.
Tiny little side thing. But I saw today Rihanna Pratchett.
Yep.
As in, Terry Pratchett's daughter. Quote tweet the showrunner of was it The Watch?
Yeah, the TV series that they're making of the books.
Yeah. And all she said was, here's the showrunner of The Watch thanking basically everyone except her father on the wrap of the filming. It's just, how can you make something based on the Terry Pratchett thing and not thank Terry Pratchett?
Yeah, that's weird.
That's like, because she said, this is basically all you need to know about this production. And it's like, oh.
Wow.
Yeah. It's like, that went well.
I wouldn't want to be in the position to be subtweeted by Rihanna Pratchett. That would,
She's
usually pretty cool. She seems, she's like pretty chill most of the darn time. I'm weirdly one of the people that she follows on Twitter. I still don't understand that, but
we've all got someone who it's like, well, it's extra cool that you're following me, but I've got no fucking idea why. I'm really nervous in case I fuck up in front of you.
I mean, to be fair though, like she also joins the I don't know if he still follows me, but I had like for ages the guy that created Iroxa Doji, Legend of the Overfiend, and the Blue Girl following me on Twitter. So like, one final question, Dave, if you don't mind. Have any advice for anyone who's interested in like making indie comics, like getting into it?
Yeah, and do you know what? It's a good callback to what we were saying about the DC tweet, right?
Yeah.
We're going to make comics to become IPs and stuff. The biggest advice I can give anyone is, like, if you have an idea for a comic, like, I mean, I see a lot of people that come up to my table at comic cons and say, I've got an idea for a comic, but I don't know how to get it down on paper. And I'm like, just get it down on paper. It's the hardest thing, but it's also the most important thing. Get it down. Don't even have any preconceptions about this could be this or this might blow up to be that. I want to do this with it. You just need that first draft, or else, like, I see so many people that just get hung up on that first draft, like worrying about, is it any good? Is it going to be a fully formed thing? Is it going to be good enough to publish before they've even done it, right? So it's like, flip your thinking. Just get that first draft down. And being completely blunt, it probably won't be great, but that's because it's a first draft, right? No first drafts are great.
Yeah,
that's why it's called a first draft.
It's the terrible draft. You just get it done, and then you can edit and revise.
Yeah, and that's it. And it's almost like, I don't know where that sort of, I'm interested to find out maybe, but where that sort of pressure to get that first draft as perfect as possible, where that kind of comes from, because it's definitely not a mentality that I would say is very healthy, because you're going to put, before you even finish your first draft, you're going to put so much undue pressure on yourself, and you're going to be stressing out already. It's meant to be a fun process. Get that first draft done, then start to figure out how to refine it, how to hone it, tighten up the dialogue, rethink the flow. A good bit of advice that I could give is just actually say the dialogue out loud. Which I do a lot, and it probably sounds really weird to my neighbours. but I tell you what, it really helps. It makes you think, no, that sounds a bit unnatural, or, this sounds too much like exposition or like an info dump. And then over time, like, you'll just start to see it come together, and you'll have this light bulb moment where you think, this is the draft, this is it, I'm gonna stop now. Although, of course, you know, even once you've started doing the artwork, you'll probably read the script again and think, I hate it now. Which I do all the time. I look back at my printed comics and think, I wish I could go back and change things.
There are two things that I've written that I've never wanted to go back to. The film script that I wrote for my master's, which was a feature film script, so it was like proper, like 90 minutes length script. And the novel that I wrote for the 1 year I managed to complete NaNoWriMo in 2013, never want to go back to that. I really hate both of those stories. Though I am going to try and do NaNoWriMo this year again.
Nice. I mean, part of it is just letting it go, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you can try and refine something and make it as good as possible, but there has to come a point where you have to go, right, this is as good as I could possibly make it. I'm not going to, like, I'll get myself upset over it, or because I'm really bad. I have in the past, you know, scrapped entire scripts almost on a whim. When something just really isn't working, I find it easier to just like nuke the whole thing because I can remember what happened in my head, right? I don't need to have it all there. But sometimes it's easier for me just to look at a blank page again and start from scratch than to like break it apart on the script and move things around. Like I kind of hate doing that. But don't do that too much, because I think Kiltopia 2, I must have rewrote that thing about 10 times at least over, and that's really crazy. I never want to work like that again. So even I'm still trying to figure out the best way to deal with rewrites and sort of refinement and stuff. You find your own pace with it, really.
I feel like having like a degree of outline at least helps aim you, but it also helps you figure out whether or not your initial idea is going to actually work when you start trying to write it down.
Like definitely having like an arc in mind. I mean, we knew the ending of Kiltopia before we even started it, writing the first page of the script. Like we had the start, the end, and we had some like general themes in the middle. And part of the fun is filling in those blanks. But then a level up from that is like, you kind of break that arc down into issues and then break it down again to the main events in those issues. And then you sort of see it layer up like that. So that's a really good way of doing it.
Okay. I think, guys, that is all we've got time for tonight. So it is good night from
Dave Cook. You can catch me on Twitter at Dave S. Cook, or you can check out Kiltopia on Facebook. And we're running the Kiltopia 3 Kickstarter in early October, so keep an eye out for the date soon.
And it's good night from me, Paul Wood. I'm Super Retroid on Twitter and Retroid on Eurogamer.net.
It's good night from me, Paul Blewett. I'm on Twitter at Paul Blewett.
And it's good night from me, Emily King. I'm on Twitter at EMKingMA. You can find notes for this episode over at www.nerdsassemble.co.uk.
So what was that?
www.nerdsassemble.co.uk www.nerdsassemble.co.uk. We're on Twitter at Nerds Podcast. We're on Facebook as Nerds Assemble Podcast. You can listen to episodes via such delights as Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and a couple other places, Stitcher. I know it's a list. We're on places. Listen to us. If you've decided to listen direct from the website. That's all we've got time for this week. So good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
I'm just going to horizontally scroll in this direction.